him and gives a talk. In which he'll try to explain some classical and Moisés results, which kind of describe what kind of group structures you should expect from a randomly chosen curve or from sometimes specially selected familiar curves. I don't really expect much of the ground on elliptic curves, and we'll have to know only very few things about elliptic curves. To begin with, I fix some notation and I use FQ to denote the final field of Q elements. And I also think about an elliptic curve as about the corresponding vector equation, which is probably not a very good point of view because the same curve as a geometric object may have several equivalent equations, but for us it's more or less the same and it's easier to do some counting when we talk about curves. So for me, always curve means a vector equation. And we can always assume that the equation is of this shape. If you have a minor condition of Q should be relatively prime to 6. If it's not, it's not the end of the world. You can modify this equation in still slightly more cluttered form, but still you have an equation which describes an elliptic curve. But for all practical purposes, today you can think about a vector equation of the an equation of this form. Well, there are two main facts which you better remember throughout my talk. And of course, they have already appeared during this workshop. The first fact is the Hasse-Weigh bound, which was proven by Hasse in this form and then by extended by Weigh to some other curves, which says that the number of points is more or less Q plus 1, and the error is no more than 2 times square root of Q. That's the first fact that you have to remember. And the second fact is that the set of points on an elliptic curve taken over the finite field has a structure of an abelian group, except that we have to add some special point which you call point on infinity, and we don't really know, don't really need to know anything about this point. Just think about this, about some strange object which doesn't really doesn't satisfy this equation and doesn't have a description in terms of x and y. It's some mysterious point which helps us to arrange the group structure. This is all we need to know. And today I'll try to address several questions which kind of are concentrated around these topics. For example, one can ask an existential question indeed, what are possible group structures which can be represented by elliptic curves? You know that each elliptic curve gives an abelian group. What kind of groups can we find among these groups? The second question has a clear cryptographic link, of course. And the question is, given a curve, and we look at the group which is associated with this curve and ask, is it typical for this group to have a large exponent? In other words, is it typical for this group to be almost cyclic in some sense? I remind you that an exponent of a group is the smallest positive integer k, such that a to the k for each element of the group is identity. Of course, you can also ask what happens, how often the ideal case occurs. So for example, how often a random curve E is cyclic. We also know that for many cryptographic applications, it's very important to know about the arithmetic structure of the number of points on an elliptic curve. For example, you would like to know how typical for this cardinality to be prime. Just one more question, which I'll try to describe, which is somehow related to the questions above, is given an integer n in the admissible interval, sometimes people call it the Hasse-Weigh interval, is it true that for each n in this interval you can find a curve with a prescribed number of points? So this is the equation which you try to address. Now, sometimes on this slide I mentioned random curve, and now I want to specify what this means. So we consider several situations, and in each of them we obtain some kind of statistical result. For example, you can fix your field F, Q, and consider a random curve. A random curve for us means we choose the coefficients of the very class equation A and B at random, so we have more or less Q squared curves. Not each pair A and B is good for us, but more or less we have Q squared equations, and we ask how many of these curves satisfy certain property. Another thing which you can do, you can fix the field and fix the curve, and then ask what happens when you take a tau of extensions. So when we consider this curve as a curve is in f cubed to the n. And finally, you can do one more thing. You can fix a curve over the rationals and then take reductions of this curve model distinct primes. So this is three situations, and typical but not always, they're listed here in the increasing order of patterns. Typically the last situation is the hardest one. And of course you can mix and match, you can do very different things. Okay. So we'll talk a little bit about the group structure and explain what is known and what we would like to know. So I already mentioned that we'll consider two different directions. We'll talk about the group structure of the point group on an elliptic curve, and also we'll talk about the arithmetic properties of the number of points. And it's not surprising that these things are closely related. And for example, you will see a little bit later that in many situations, the following GCD plays a crucial role. You really want to control the GCD between Q minus 1 and the number of points. It's a very important parameter. Even if it's not clear why, from what I said before, it's not obvious that this thing is important. But later, I'll explain why this becomes important. And of course, I already mentioned that motivations behind many operations is just some cryptographic applications, but they also mathematical interest. Just to mention some applications of cryptographic interest, besides which are already which have already been discussed during previous talks. Let me mention that there are several papers by different subsets of this corpus where people considered pseudorandom number generators constructed from elliptic curves. And for all the constructions to work, we need to know that the exponent of the corresponding curve is greater than the square root of q. And in fact, it's not even enough. You need this epsilon, which will later give us some headache. In some sense, this epsilon is important, and we'll have to fight against this epsilon. Okay. So this is why we want to know what happens to the exponent. But there are some other cryptographic links that I've already mentioned. Okay. So group structure. First of all, some classical results, which say that this group is either cyclic, or if it's not cyclic, it's a front two, meaning that it's a product of two cyclic subgroups. And in this case, you can always assume that L, the size of the smaller group, divides the size of the larger group. There's nothing elliptic curve specific in the statement. If you have this statement, you immediately obtain that you have this representation. So there's nothing particular deep here. Well, the second question which I would like to address is what happens to the cardinalities. And here again, there is a very old result by Max Deering, which says that any integer in this interval, except for a small number of explicitly described exceptions, is taken as a cardinality of a certain curve. And in fact, when q is equal to p, we don't have any exceptions at all. So we know what happens with this spectrum of the values of the cardinalities. In fact, both things could be much more precise. And again, several people obtained this result in the same year, but more or less independently. This result says that apart from some fully described exceptions. For any LLM which satisfies this condition, and such that the product can be realized as a cardinality and be known that for this reason after the request that LM belongs to the Hathaway interval, we have a curve with a prescribed group structure. So, in a sense, almost all reasonable group structures can be realized as well. We have slightly more precise forms, at least for the first statement.
Is this constructive?
No, I don't think so.
You give the CM field, so if you can construct curves by a CM method, maybe.
Yeah, probably it's not easier than just fix L and M and then try to construct a corresponding curve. At least the first result of Göring can be made more precise, and it was done actually by Hendrik Lenster almost 20 years ago, who proved that if you take any N in the Hathaway interval, then its probability 1 over square root of p times some phi, the cardinality of the curve is n. You certainly would expect that this probability should be of this order, because you have more or less p squared curves, and n is number chosen from an interval of length square root of p, 4 times square root of p. So the probability should be of this order. The bound is not as good, and most likely, it's not true that the probability is actually 1 over square root of p. There should be some factor, so there is some non-uniformity. But overall, it's very close to what we expect. On the other hand, we also know that if you take n in this interval, by the way, this is not a type one. You should really stay away from the edges. That's why I drop 2. You can put any coefficient here, which is bigger than 2, put it 1.999. But it must not be 2. So if you take n inside of this slightly smaller interval, that you also know that the probability is greater than 1 over square root of p, again, divided by some small function. And assuming the year age, the extended Riemann hypothesis, you can improve this result a little bit. For example, you can drop the restriction on the number of exceptional values, two exceptions, and improve the bound.
Sorry?
Extended Riemann hypothesis. Unfortunately, I don't know any corresponding results for the distribution of the group structures. So it's one of the open equations, which I believe will be very interesting to answer. Given a group structure, you know that it can be realized, but how often? It's natural to expect that some asymptotic formulas can be obtained. And certainly, the distribution will not be uniform. Okay. Some other things. The exponent. It's clear that if our curve is cyclic, then the exponent is about q, it's the number of points, and it's as good as it gets. But if we don't have this information, then the best you can say is the following trivial inequality. You know that we have only two cyclic subgroups, so the size of the largest subgroup is greater than the square root of the cardinality, which is square root of q, which is a free bound. Unfortunately, it doesn't give us anything because it falls below the threshold which I mentioned before. So we still have this ugly epsilon, which forces us to ask whether we can get better bound. And in fact, we do have better bounds. And one of them was obtained by Venuskov, who proved the following. If you take a curve, define it over Q, which has no complex multiplication, may notice that I skipped one of the slides at the beginning of my talk because I decided not to give a definition of complex multiplication. It's kind of not very transparent, but what you should believe is that if you take a, in some sense, a random curve over Q, it's not likely to have complex multiplication. So not having complex multiplication is a typical case. Even if there are curves which with complex multiplication and they're interesting as well. and usually they're a little bit easier than the curves with curves which have no complex multiplication. So for this curves, we know that the exponent is always greater than square root of p, which we have for free anyway, times some logarithmic factor. So it's a very small improvement over the trivial bound, and well, we all know Bernoulli and know how the quality of this work. So this is a demonstration how hard this equation could be. And unfortunately, it still falls below p to the 1/2 plus epsilon, because this epsilon doesn't stay for logarithmic factor. Something more substantial than the logarithm. So this is no good. He also proved that under the ERH, which again stays for the extended Riemann hypothesis, there are infinitely many times when the exponent is reasonably small, namely smaller than p to 7/8 log p. And in the same paper, he proved that if E has complex multiplication, then we cannot obtain bounds of this type. Because if you believe that there are infinitely many primes of the form k squared plus 1, and we have no reason, hope, we have no reason to doubt this, then this curve has exponent which is exactly k modulo p for prime of this type, of this form. Well, this is what we know for all. Of course, it's natural to ask what happens for most of the primes, and this is our main point of view, what happens in a typical case. And here, this is the result of Bill Duke, who's right in the front, who proved the following. For almost all primes and all curves over FP, the exponent is greater than p to the 3/4 minus epsilon, which is already above the threshold which you set for us. So you know that there are some curves, in fact, many curves, many cases for which our bound can give something bound on the some properties of pure random number generators. Last year, Kevin Ford and myself proved the following two things. The first one was we proved that the bound is tight. You cannot replace 3/4 with anything else. In fact, you cannot even drop epsilon. Written in this form, it's already false. And we also extended this bound to Jacobians. But for Jacobians, we are not able to prove that the bound is tight. So well, still there are several things which definitely have to be done here. Well, so we have this. But it's certainly natural to ask whether we can get better bounds. I already mentioned that this bound cannot be improved, but there are some other situations that we can get better bounds. And this is because the quality of results on the discrepancy of many sequences which come from the elliptic from elliptic curves and some other results improve when the exponent grows.
When you say almost all primes,
means that you take this means if you take almost all kn up, always means if you take the set of primes p after x, is whatever property you want to satisfy, it's little o of phi of x.
So when you say you prove it sharp, you have a positive density set.
Yes, if you drop epsilon, you have a positive density. There's a positive density of primes such that the exponent is smaller than p to 3/4.
Another before any curve?
No. This result falls for all curves. And this is why it's kind of tight, because we regress too much. And on the next slide, I want to drop this condition for all curves and say something about, again, a typical case when the curve is chosen at random. So, let's see whether it's typical for the exponent to be close to Q. Of course, when we say close, we always mean because the exponent divides the number of points. And if it's not exactly the number of points, it's normally the half. So close means the logarithm of this exponent is close to the logarithm of q. Okay, and again, in the same paper, Bill proved that if you drop this request that you wanted something for all curves, if you fix your curve first, fix it all the rationals, and take reductions of the curve model all primes, then you have your dream result, the exponent is about p, with order of magnitude, for almost all primes, except that if e doesn't have complex multiplication, you have to assume the ERH, but it's a small price to pay for results like this. You can also complement this result with a result which applies for a fixed p and almost all curves e, but it's in fact a very simple result which we can derive from some very simple tools. The situation is usually simple. So we already discussed two out of three situations when we fix a curve and change the prime, when we fix a prime and change the curve, and finally there is one more situation when we fix a curve and a field and consider the tower of extensions. And here, Florian Luca and myself prove the following. If E is an ordinary curve over Q, then for almost all integers n, you have this bound, which again shows that the exponent is very close to Q to the n. It's definitely lead to O of n. It's a nicely looking bound, except that this slide hides one major disadvantage of this bound. When they say almost all n, the bounds are kind of ineffective. It cannot be an explicit constant which is involved in the bound, because it uses some tools from number theory which is not effective. On the other hand, for all integers, we have a bound which is much weaker. We are back to basically square root of q, except that we put something which grows with n. But an advantage of this bound is that it's completely effective, so you can evaluate all these constants. Essentially, only one constant, the exponent c of q, which depends on q. And I already mentioned that the proof involves some tools from number theory, like from the theory of the abundant approximations, and uses things like subspace theorem, lower bounds of linear forms of logarithms, upper bounds on the number of zeros of linear recurrent sequences, and some other things. And in fact, it uses some ideas which were described in a paper by Karadzi and Zanyu in 2004. As a byproduct, we obtain an upper bound on the GCD. I already mentioned this GCD and said that the GCD would appear in some other constructions, and later on you will see. And for example, this GCD is important for the Victor Miller algorithm. Because if the GCD is large, you have to factor the GCD and you have no chance to find the group structure of the curve. Miller's algorithm uses knowledge of factorization of the GCD. On the other hand, you can also show that sometimes the exponent is not very large, and here we have managed to prove together with James McKee from Royal College that the exponent drops below q to the n times this factor. This is quite close to what we had as a low bound. Well, this is just a short survey of the results which people obtained. Now, how did people prove all these results, or most of these results? Essentially, all proofs are based on combining the following facts. We know that a group of points is isomorphic to a product of at most two thick groups. We have already mentioned this. L divided M. We can also extract a little bit more information, and namely we can use vapor to show that L divides Q minus 1. And this is exactly why this GCD between the number of points and Q minus 1 plays a crucial role in this business. So we use this argument. Of course, we need this result of length, which I already mentioned, saying that each n is represented by the more or less right number of curves. And from now on, we can completely forget about elliptic curves and deal with the number theoretic equation, which is essentially to study the GCD of a random integer in this interval in Q minus 1. And typically studying the GCD is not a hard equation, except that here the interval is very short. And it's short and it's kind of away from the origin. So if you use standard sieving technique, it won't do, because you have to take into account large primes and you have to sieve over a very small interval. So you have to be very careful. Maybe later I'll explain what you can do and what you can't do. Okay. So far we talked about large exponents. We still have perfect situation when the group is cyclic, and of course it's natural to ask how often this happens. This equation has also been addressed in the literature, and in a situation when you fix your field and change your curve, there's a paper by Vlados who proved that at least 75% of elliptic curves over Q are cyclic. On the other hand, this number is nearly 100%. In fact, he gave an explicit formula for the proportion of elliptic curves, which involves some prime divisors of Q. Very easy to evaluate for each Q, except that you have to factor some numbers. And you see that it's between 3/4 and 1, this proportion.
Is it uniformly bounded away from 1?
It's uniformly bounded away from 1. It's not 100%. It's slightly less than 1. The density.
Wait, as Q goes from 3?
It may approach 1. For each Q, it's ridiculous. There's no Q when it's 1. Now, we can consider the dual situation, and in fact, it was also done by in a different paper, where in this situation, you fix your curve over Q and start changing the extension. And again, you know that this happens for positive proportion of extension to the positive proportion of n. And again, there are some asymptotic formulas how often this happens. Finally, you can fix your curve over Q and start changing the prime. And this is what is very well known as the Link-Trotter conjecture. It's one of Link-Trotter conjectures. There are some results obtained by different people. There are some results by Bill and Duke and by some other people. And you see, well, I think they prepared the slides sometime before, and they had to change the date. Continuous business people obtain new and new results here. And in fact, we know quite a lot. We know that the set of primes for which this curve is cyclic has a positive density. The density is not what predicted by the Link-Trotter conjecture, but at least we know that it happens with positive density. And there is also a very nice result which estimates the smallest prime for which this reduction is cyclic, which is kind of an analog of Linux result about the smallest prime in arithmetic progression. So there are some very nice results, but the problem is not completely solved. Okay. Now a little bit more about the arithmetic structure of the number of points. Of course, the holy grail of all cryptographers is to show that you can easily construct curves with prime cardinalities, or at least to show that there are many curves with prime cardinalities. And, well, there's no reason to doubt that this is the case. For example, we certainly believe that for every case there are sufficiently many curves over a few, such as the number of points, prime. We also believe that if you take extensions, that prime cardinalities appear as well, except that you have to be slightly more careful here. If you say prime cardinality, it's obviously false, because the number of points has a divisor, a big divisor, the number of points on the ground. But you can take this ratio and have the same equation. And this ratio should be prime infinitely often. You can also ask what happens if you take a curve over Q and take reductions model of distinct primes. Again, you expect that the cardinality will be prime infinitely often. Unfortunately, all these results are out of reach nowadays. There's no hope to see any of them done anytime soon.
But the last one you need to assume the covariant torsion, the triangular torsion.
Yes, of course. Well, there's some natural condition. Like here, of course, N should be prime itself, otherwise there are some other devices. And one of the obstacles is the lack of the results about prime and short intervals. For example, if you look at the first situation, which typically is the easiest case, even here, you cannot even guarantee that there is a prime in the cluster with intervals. The intervals are short. Even the Riemann hypothesis is not powerful enough to give you this information.
There is at least one.
Sorry?
There is at least one prime in your intervals. Oh, yeah.
So, of course, the answers are yes to all these questions, but there's no way we will be able to prove anything here anytime soon. Now, we can consider somewhat dual equation and ask, is it typical for the cardinality to be smooth, meaning that the cardinality should not have a large prime divisor, which again is a very important question. For example, famous elliptic curve factorization algorithm of Hendrik Lester cannot be rigorously analyzed because of the lack of knowledge of the distribution of smooth numbers in short intervals of smooth cardinalities. This interval is just too short to handle. Between q minus 2 times square root of q and q plus 2 times square root of q. And we don't know how smooth numbers behave in intervals that short. But it's just at the borderline of the length which you can handle. And that was actually one of the motivating ideas behind another work of Hendrik Lenster together with Jonathan Beale and Carl Sonera, who said, well, elliptic curves live in a very short interval. What if we take hyper-elliptic curves? Because the cardinalities of the Jacobians live in a much larger interval between roughly q minus q to the 3/4 and q plus q to the 3/4, which is a much larger interval, and it's already within the limit. And this is how they obtained the results, which they call hyper-elliptic movements test, which essentially gives you a rigorous algorithm to find small prime divisors of integers. It's a series of three papers, two of them are already out, and the third one is still in progress. Well, now let's come back to the case of primality. You know we have no chance to answer this, but can we at least say that sometimes the cardinalities are rough, meaning that they have a large prime divisor? You would like to see that the cardinality is prime itself. We don't know how to do this. Can we guarantee that the cardinality has a large prime divisor? And here the situation is slightly more promising. In fact, this result by Glynn Harman, who proved that in this interval, you can guarantee the existence of an integer n such that the largest prime divisor is almost n to the 3/4, a little bit under 0.74. And of course, you know that this number can be realized with the cardinality. Of course, it doesn't tell you how to construct the curve, and it's a separate business. But at least we know that there is a hope to have something true. Another approach to the question about trying to generalize another kind of relaxation of this equation is to ask about the number of prime divisors. Again, you want to see curves with the number of prime divisors as 1. You know we can't get it, so let's see what we can get. There is a very old paper by Kumar-Murthy and Ramurthy, who actually studied a more general equation, but as a byproduct, the paper implies that if you take the number of points on the reduction of a given curve over Q, and take the number of, you take the number of prime divisors and subtract what one would expect, which is the double log of the cardinality, or with our level of precision, we can just replace it with P. And you take the average of all primes, the average is small. So most of the reductions would have the expected number of prime divisors, but the random number would have. And this result needs the ERH. There is another result by Yuri from Waterloo, who proves a similar result for the same curves. And in this curve, in this case, the result is a conditional. Well, there are also some results which try to say something about extreme cases. For example, this result of the following flavor with mesh shows that for a substantial proportion of primes, namely for x over log x squared primes, the total number of prime divisors count is with multiplicities, big omega count number of prime divisors is multiplicities. This number is no more than 8. Provided that E is not a curve, E has no complex multiplication. If you count prime divisors without multiplicities, we can drop it down to 5, and it goes down to 3 for same curves. Unfortunately, I believe this proof has some problems. And there is another result by Alina Kojikawa, which is not on my slide, which improves this bound a little. So we know that we are very close already to what we would really like to have, namely 1 all the way through. We cannot get 1, but we can get some reasonable constant. Now a little bit more about cryptographic applications, namely talk a little bit about the embedding degree and the attack, which is known as the MOVE attack, which is designed by managers Okamoto and Winston in 1993. As has already been explained in several talks, the idea of the attack is to take a group of points on the elliptic curve and embed it in a finite field. And we know that for finite fields, the discrete logarithm is easier than for elliptic curves, so it looks like a very promising approach, except that if you do some counting, you see that, well, there are some restrictions on the side of K. Unfortunately, we cannot embed our subgroup in the same field. We have to go into extension most of the time. So what we pay the spectra of K. And now we have to see whether the number field C is powerful enough to handle this field and be more efficient than the square root of square root of P algorithm, if you can run on the elliptic curve itself. So assume that K is chosen the best possible way, and this best possible way means that K is the smallest integer for which the cardinality divides P to the K, and we call it the embedding degree. So you can easily see that if the embedding degree happens to be little O plus P squared, that you're really in trouble. The number field C beats the square root of P algorithm, even if we run this algorithm in extension. So it's natural to ask how likely this situation is.
Isn't log P squared over log P squared?
Sure, yeah, but we don't care about this. Yes, you can do it a little bit later. Because later you'll analyze how often the embedding degree log is smaller than log P squared. You simplify it a little bit more.
Okay.
So how often was the embedding degree to be small? And you remember that log P squared was kind of a threshold. There is a paper by Dolores Subramanian and Neil Koblitz, who proves that for almost all the primes P and almost all elliptic curves over P is prime cardinalities, the embedding degree is large. More specifically, if you take a random prime and a random curve modulo P is prime cardinality, then the probability that the embedding degree is less than log P squared, which is already above what we would really guarantee for the attack, is negligible, 1 over x. There are two things which Florian and I didn't quite like in this result. First of all, you randomize both things, primes and curves, and then you request that the curve is a prime cardinality. So we wanted to get a result which would be less restrictive. And in this situation, when prime P is given and you are not allowed to change it, so the probability is not taken over random primes, you change only your curve. We proved the following. And actually, no, we didn't need this assumption. Exactly what we did, we wanted to eliminate, sorry. Okay. Eliminated enough. Good. We also can prove that the probability is still exponentially small. The bound looks kind of cluttered, but it still says that the probability is very small. And we put it in a slightly more general form. Instead of log p squared, we introduced another parameter, which is the ratio of logs.
Excuse me, how do you define the embedding degree when the cardinality is not prime? Do you try to embed the whole curve or only the prime factor of one?
Yeah, it's a good question. There are several things to define the embedding degree. For this result, in this form, the embedding degree is with respect to the whole curve. You want to embed the whole group. However, we have some other results which apply to cover the talk because it explains some technical details. And I don't want to be distracted by this. We have similar results which address some other situations. When you have to embed the largest prime factor, there's a subgroup whose cardinality is the largest prime factor of the number of points, which is probably the most interesting case of cryptography. And we have bound in this case. And you can also imagine a situation that you still work with a whole group of points, but you can embed different subgroups into different fields. And then you're interested in the smallest case, such as the cardinality divided as well, because there's no need to embed everything in the same field. And you have similar results. One more topic which I wanted to mention. We all know that pairing is very important for cryptography, and we all want to construct elliptic curves which are pairing friendly, namely which have small embedding degree. And actually the previous slide shows that if you take a random curve, you have no chance. The embedding degree tends to be very large. We also know that super singular curves give you a perfect example because the embedding degree is at most 2, except that we know that super singular curves are not to be trusted, even if you don't really know why. Anyway, so let's see what we can do for ordinary curves. And for this, I need to define one more object. I need to define the case cyclotomic holonormal, which is the product of this linear factors. And well, there's nothing too special in this, except that because of some miracle, this polynomial has energy coefficients. And well, we have to spend maybe 5 minutes to understand why this miracle happens. Now, most of the constructions work into two steps. And the first step, using some black magic or some other tricks, we choose certain parameters. Parameters L, K, T, and Q. We have four parameters. We satisfy some conditions. We choose T to be no more than two times square root of Q. And T should not take these values for some reasons. We also want L to divide this number. And we want L to divide this value of the platonic polynomial. And it's clear what you want to do. You want to construct an elliptic curve with that many points. L will be the size of subgroup which you will use for our applications. And the weighting degree will be K. So it's clear what's behind these conditions. It's not clear how to achieve this, but let's talk about this later. Assume somebody tells us this set of parameters L, K, T, and Q. This is not the end of our voyage, because we have no parameters, we don't have curve yet. Now we have to construct it. So the second step is actually getting our hands dirty and constructing this curve. Actually, our hands will get dirty enough in the first step anyway. What do you want from our parameters? You want K to be reasonably small, say 2, 3, 6, maybe now it should be extended a little bit more, 12, 18. And we also want this ratio to be as large as possible, better, to be close to 1. Now, unfortunately, even if you are given parameters with this condition, constructing a curve is not that easy, because all known algorithms run in time, which is kind of exponential in size of the CM discriminant. So what's the CM discriminant? You take this expression, t squared minus 4q, and pull out the largest square factor. What remains s is a square free integer, and this is what we call the CM discriminant. Sometimes s, sometimes 4 times s, the minus sign. But basically, s, this would define the size of your discriminant. And for our construction to be feasible, s must be small. And it's a very unpleasant condition. Because we know that a random integer tends to have a very small square factor. You know that a positive proportion of integers are square free. So it's natural to expect that the square factor is something which should be small, feasible. If it's not a random integer, it satisfies some restrictions. But we'll see that it still doesn't change much the situation. So what you try to evaluate? You try to evaluate the number of prime powers q for which you can find the prime L and t satisfying 1 and 2. I'm sure you don't remember what 1 and 2 are. Ah, exactly the condition which we need. Condition which tells you the curve is good for us. For this quantity, Florian Zucker and myself proved the following bound, which we recently improved. It's 1/2 here. Still not good enough. And this bound says that if z, which is the size of the square free part, and you really want it to be small, if z is x to the root of 1, then unless you assume that your prime factor is less than square root of x, you have no chance to find a field in a given range. So if the range of q is fixed, say between m and 2m, most likely you will find it because there are very few of them. So the situation is kind of not very promising here. Of course, this doesn't mean that you have no chance to find some special tendencies. This means that this paper is, will be raised parts, nothing more. So our choices will be very limited. And at the very end, I want to show how some of the standards can be analyzed. And of course, my analysis is heuristic, and you will see why, because they use too many assumptions, which we don't know how to handle. But at least maybe you can see some ideas which could be used to analyze some other papers. I think Tanya already mentioned today the standard curves, MNT curves, which were suggested by these three Japanese mathematicians. And these curves produce elliptic curves, which satisfy again our conditions 1 and 2. By now, I think you already remember what they are. It's 1 and 2, this is what you want. And they give embedding degree between 3 and 6, 3, 4, and 6. We don't need 5. Now I want to explain some reasons which Florian and I just kind of discovered almost instantly when we looked at this construction, kind of on the very surface, which suggests that this construction is not likely to produce too many curves. Unless if you want an ideal situation when the cardinality is prime. And then later explain why if you relax this condition, this construction is back to business. Produce curves maybe not as good as you would like them to have, but still good enough. So our arguments are based on combination of some basic observations. If you look at the construction, you see that this construction gives you a parametric family of curves, and the parameters run to solution to a pair equation, namely to this equation where S is a discriminant. That's the first thing. Well, it's not an observation, it's a fact that you can find in the paper. Our first observation was that consecutive solutions of a Taylor equation grow exponentially. They probably grow at least as s to the c times j. The j solution has this bound. And we have all reasons to believe that, in fact, they grow even faster. Depends on the size of class number, and we know that it's likely to be large. Well, this is the first observation. The second observation is that if you take a random number in some sense, that the probability for this number to be prime is 1 over log n. Most of the heuristic arguments here, what most of the heuristic arguments usually assume. Now, for MNT curves, you have two independent primality conditions, because you want to have two prime numbers in your disposal. One of them, you have to have a few, which gives you one primality condition. Of course, it could be a prime power, but prime power is so rare that you may forget about them right away. And you also want the cardinality to be prime, or almost prime, which is another primality condition. So let's do some simple counting. What's the expected output of this construction for a given S? Your solutions grow S to the C times J, at least, probably even faster. And the probability for each J to give you a curve, which you desire, would be 1 over log this number squared, because you have two primality conditions. And you see that the series converges, and the probability is actually 1 over log S. It's less than 1, actually, when S grows. So most of them, most of the values of S won't give you anything at all. In fact, if you believe that the solutions grow faster, the probability is even smaller. So this suggests that the chances to have many curves from this construction, where both the cardinality and the field, of course, are prime numbers, are very small. But if you relax the condition of primality, if you say that you just want a curve whose cardinality has a large prime divisor, exactly the same arguments can give you that the construction is likely to produce infinitely many curves. In fact, all these arguments can be reverse that. Instead of less, you can say greater than. By the way, I don't think I ever explained the meaning of the symbol. It doesn't mean much less, it means big O, which I have to explain the very beginning. I'm sorry. So this notation means exactly the same as this. Except that typographically it's a bit easier, correct. So this construction, of course, still may give some useful curves, but not curves, right, cardinality. And it's certainly another question, open question, to find better constructions if they exist, which I personally doubt. I don't think there is a regular construction which will produce infinitely many curves by cardinality. So I think it's necessary to realize this condition and look for curves whose cardinality just get a large prime divisor, but not prime. Thank you.